Alexa, who is the doctor?
The Doctor is a fictional Time Lord in the long-running BBC sci-fi series Doctor Who, traveling through time and space in a TARDIS.
Welcome everybody to the Lonely TARDIS. We're joined this week by Alexa. Thank you, Amazon. We're going to be discussing the amazing Christmas special this week. No long drawn out intro. We're just going to get right into it. I'm Dolly Domofsky. Joining me as usual is Marcus Beer.
Yes, I am.
John Norton.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Steven Strum.
That's me. Still.
You still, and that lovely voice you heard was Alexa explaining who the doctor is. She did a damn fine job, I must say.
And that's the I'm going to have to turn her off now because I've got you on speakerphone. And every time you say Alexa, she says, what do you want to listen to?
Alexa.
No, I just put her on mute. Thank you. I turned the microphone off.
That's why I love to just yell, hey, Siri. Or Siri. Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever. Yeah. Xbox on.
Okay.
The problem with that is that none of that shit actually works as well as Alexa does, apparently.
You're right.
The Xbox just turned itself on.
What? That's the brilliant. One time it's ever worked.
Hey, my Xbox, I'm basically, I've got you on speakerphone as I wander around the house doing bits and bobs. I was walking into the living room as you said the Xbox on word, and I kid you not, the fucking thing lit up and beeped. Stop screwing with my audibles.
Well, that means you win $1 million, right? Like that was that was what the Kinect was for. It was just everybody bought one, and then you got to see like whoever got it to actually work that they won the sweepstakes. They won the contest, which is why nobody's works.
Yeah, Xbox, Bing, where to shove a TARDIS?
I'm far away from the Xbox.
Gentlemen, companions, welcome. We're going to have an awesome show today. We're going to discuss the Doctor Who Christmas special, The Husbands of River Song. And this is essentially the last episode of the season, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. But first, happy holidays, as everyone has sort of stated already. Hope you guys had a wonderful holiday season so far. We still have the brand new year to come. To arrive at the end of this week, but hopefully people are going to be listening to this podcast and ringing in the new year at the sound of bell tolling at midnight. So I'm a little nasally, pardon me. I picked up the winter cold, so I'm going to hope the other three wonderful gentlemen take the reins as much as possible. But we're going to be discussing what, huh?
Do you need us to leave then? If you need to get three wonderful gentlemen on here? I mean, I know Google Hangouts doesn't handle having a lot of people on very well. So I just figured, you know, if we needed to leave and make room for somebody that was wonderful.
No, you're just getting rid of you two.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Siri, where can I find three men?
Detroit.
Only at work.
In the TARDIS.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Three wonderful gentlemen in Detroit is on a par with finding, you know, a virgin in Los Angeles.
It's basically four men in a TARDIS is our podcast. Did you guys have a great holiday season? I think a couple of us didn't get anything Doctor Who related. I know, Marcus, you mentioned you got something pretty awesome Doctor Who related.
I got a couple of things Doctor Who related. First up, yes, I got the Lego TARDIS set.
Sweetness.
Which I obviously have not opened yet because when I do, it's going to take me at least 6 years to complete.
At least two regenerations.
Well, I haven't finished the Millennium Falcon I got last Christmas yet.
Okay, all right.
And then, of course, the Doctor Who socks. Every year I get a couple of pairs of Who socks. And then from some good friends, I got Doctor Who Trivial Pursuit.
Ooh.
Which is awesome. And a tiny Lego Tom Baker Doctor Who.
Oh, one of the Lego, or is it the the other
Mega Blocks,
like, or whatever that version is, right?
It looks like a Lego version.
Okay. Very cool.
Actually, you know what? I lied. I said I didn't get anything Doctor Who related, and I technically haven't, but I actually just yesterday got a text from somebody who has been making a Tom Baker scarf for me for like the past 3 to 5 years.
Oh, that's awesome.
All you need is a fro.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I'm the spitting image of Tom Baker as it is. So
you're Strom Baker.
Strom Baker. Yes, that is my stage name.
he emerges onto the stage out of a TARDIS and sheds his Tom Baker scarf for all the lovely ladies.
You put glasses and a lab coat on, and slip your hair back and pretend to be what's her name, Zygon girl.
Osman.
Mm-hmm. Zygon girl.
Yeah. Zygon girl.
I think she's credited as that.
Yeah, Zygon girl was the award-winning film of 2015.
That's true. The award-winning film of
2015.
I love that. Zygon girl. That's brilliant. I would watch that.
I did forget one more thing that actually did arrive 2 days ago, and that is a TARDIS skin for my PS4.
Oh, cool. Oh, I didn't even know they had those.
My wife found one somewhere. From China. But I have my PS4 is about to get TARDIS skin.
I'm now picking those up.
Now, it begs the question: do you have an entertainment center that has space for you to put your PS4 up vertically so it looks, so it looks right? Because it's got to be standing up tall, otherwise it's it ruins the illusion.
Dude, I have a whole games room.
Okay.
The PS4 is in the games room, and I actually have it's the way I will send you pictures once it's all done, so you can see it in its glory.
So this is what life is like when you don't have children. You just get a bunch of free stuff and have your own game room and everything like that. I've got a good life to look forward to.
I live in a dream.
I don't get free stuff. I mean, it was Christmas gift. She got everything she wanted as well. So, it was just a cool.
So give and take.
Splurging from on Christmas. Don't make me come to Fargo and spank you.
I think you mean Yorktown, USA.
Yorktown, USA. That's right.
I got a TARDIS mug, and when you fill it with hot coffee, the TARDIS disappears from one side to the other.
Very cool.
That's cool.
I believe you gentlemen may have also received a special Lonely TARDIS one-of-a-kind numbered Christmas card as well. Even I saw you, Sean, yours is waiting back in the...
Yeah, I was going to say, mine might be back in California.
Mine did arrive, and it was glorious. I actually really loved the personal Christmas card as well.
Oh, cool.
The naked centerfold of you. That was... Well, yeah. I never had to unfold a piece of cardboard so many times to get the full picture, but...
where I stuck the tinsel was pretty funny, I think.
I mean, those Doctor Who songs are really going to come in handy now.
Yeah, exactly. And many of our listeners also tweeted photographs, those listeners who won the holiday greeting card from the Lonely TARDIS crew. So hopefully everybody enjoyed those. And hopefully everybody else had a wonderful, wonderful holiday so far. Again, like we said, there's still a few days left, few holidays between now and the end of the so-called season. But let's dive into the reason we've all come together, which is the Husbands of Riversong. I might add that the four of us, none of us are the Husbands of Riversong, unfortunately. None of us have married her. But it looks like at least two, possibly three people have in this episode, if not more. I will read the short synopsis of the Husbands of Riversong, which goes as such. It's Christmas Day in a remote human colony, and the Doctor is hiding from Christmas carols and comedy antlers. But when a crashed spaceship calls upon the Doctor for help, he finds himself recruited into Riversong's squad and hurled into a fast and frantic chase across the galaxy. King Hydroflax is furious, and his giant robot bodyguard is out of control and coming for them all. Will Nardole survive? And when will Riversong work out who the Doctor is? All will be revealed on a starliner full of galactic supervillains and a destination the Doctor has been avoiding for a very long time. I think it's safe to say that at the onset of this episode, River doesn't know that the Doctor is the Doctor. She's still thinking that it could be one of the David Tennant or Matt Smith incarnations. I think the big hook was the Doctor initially trying to get her to realize that he is the Doctor, and then she doesn't quite figure it out until essentially the very end of the episode. That was a neat twist. But yeah, this episode started brought back Alex Kingston as River Song. We also had Matt Lucas, great actor from Little Britain, as Nardole. And then we had Greg Davies is playing King Hydroflex, and Greg Davies is kind of a renowned actor as well. There were a bunch of other cool actors in there. A lot of great costumes, great alien designs, but I want to dive into I've said dive into like three times already. I want to get into our initial thoughts for this episode, then we'll get into some of the nitty-gritty after that. But I want to start with Steven. What was your general feel for this episode? Did you like it? Thumbs up, thumbs down, TARDIS up, TARDIS down, mistletoe down, mistletoe up?
All right. I get you. I'm
anything
here.
Up, anything down?
Yeah. Well, I did get that Christmas card, so, you know. I think we know the direction that things are going. No, I liked this episode quite a bit. I mean, it's a little tough to not think about, like, last season and think about, like, the god-awful Christmas special we got and compare the two of them, especially since I was sitting around watching the Christmas special marathon on BBCA.
Yes, which was great.
Yeah, it was a good way to kick things off until you realize about halfway through that they're just getting subsequently worse and worse.
Yep.
But this episode was really great. Marcus shared that Vanity Fair article about having good closure for River Song for once, and I think that was absolutely the case here, especially after the Trenzalore stuff, if that was Trenzalore, I can't remember the exact planet with the TARDIS graveyard thing. It was just such a flat note for that character and such a
weird... Yeah, it was Trenzalore, by the way. It was Trenzalore,
okay. It was such a weird way to handle that and a weird place to put that character, especially, you know, it was like a post-Silence in the Library, River Song. And even in that article, Alex Kingston points out that she didn't even know exactly what she was supposed to be doing in there. So I would have been very disappointed if that had been her swan song. And instead we got this, which was pretty great. It was, you know... tons of River and the Doctor without a companion to kind of like have to talk things down for the whole time. But we still got a lot of good bouncing back and forth between the two characters because we're in a situation that we've never seen before, which is the Doctor having an upper hand over River, which almost exclusively River is the one who knows what's going to happen before the Doctor does in any story with the two of them. And so that was a fun interaction to have that also didn't, I think, sacrifice anything that makes River River, which is just that River is a person that gets into things and takes charge and is much more fun for it because she does feel like such a like a dominant character. She's super easy. Like she's fast with a quip. She's, you know, clever. She's sharp. And Alex Kingston has her, you know, moving at a really good pace all the time. And because of the way that they framed this with her not knowing who the Doctor was, but also having... But also having her be in a situation where she was kind of like allowing herself to kind of command him because she didn't know who he was, and him allowing her to kind of like continue on as she was. That was really great. And then, you know, we got some great lines and some great moments, like that "Hello, sweetie" at the very end is like probably one of the best interactions that Capaldi has had, you know, since taking over the mantle of the Doctor and everything like that, and, you know, felt like it well-deserved at this point after, you know, we had kind of, like, squandered River Song a little bit with all of the weird mythologizing and stuff like that in Season 6 and the Matt Smith era and everything. So I was glad. You know, I was really glad about all that stuff. And then, you know, we wrap things up with the, like, how long is a night on Deryllium? 27 years or 24 years or whatever it was?
Yeah, it's 24 years, yep.
24 years. So, like, we, you know, on top of everything, we get the implicit idea that like the two of them are going to have that time that we were always promised that they would have, but they never had. And yet we don't have to basically like sit and dwell on it for, you know, a super long amount of time or anything like that, or get burned out on River or abandon their dynamic with each other. But we still get them to have their romantic swan song together. And I really, really like that. So there you go.
Yeah, I you know, I'm gonna hop in here. I totally agree with you. It was, to me, this was the River Song swan song. The River Swan Song that we wanted. You know, I don't know, exactly. The last few companions we've had, we had Amy and Rory, we had Clara. None of them really got the closure that that I think we as fans wanted. We figured River, her final episode, the Trenzalore stuff, was kind of fell into the same bucket, right? It was all these kind of not really what we wanted type of thing, but. It was great to see Moffat, and Stephen Moffat was the writer of this episode. It was great to see him.
Every River Song episode is a Stephen Moffat.
Oh, is it? Okay. It was great to see him actually come back and deliver everything that you know, that we were kind of promised. Because even all the way back in Silence of the Library, excuse me, which was also written by Stephen Moffat. You know, there are a lot of mentions, because that was technically River's final living episode, I guess you could say. There are a lot of mentions of Deryllium and their final day together, and the Doctor giving her the sonic screwdriver. And he knows, Capaldi knows that this day is coming, or the 12th Doctor knows this day is coming. Meanwhile, River, and I think it's alluded to, River saying that that he's gone through all his regenerations, so that's why he possibly couldn't be this Doctor, right? So that's why she was looking at Matt Smith as, or one of the others, as the faces of the Doctor. So she doesn't quite remember him. So he knows this. She knows that her diary is coming to a close. She's been looking for her husband and kind of faking being married along the way. It when he finally reveals himself to her, that you're right, that "Hello, sweetie" line, like, it got me. And then I think. When they're kind of standing on that the edge, looking at the whistling or the singing towers or the stone structures, whatever, the monuments, and she asks, you know, she's getting very teary-eyed because she does have a lot of feelings for him, and she does that great monologue, I guess you could say, where she's talking to Hydra Flax and everyone and saying how this can't be the Doctor, you know, the Doctor doesn't love you back. Nobody, you know, you can love the Doctor, but he can't love you back. And you could feel the Doctor's hearts kind of melting a little bit, because he was a little bit ice cold early on this episode. But and it was cool to see that, and it was almost very touching, because it's the kind of stuff that you would hear from a loved one, from a significant other, someone who really cares about you. And I think that really got the Doctor in ways that he kind of needed it. I say that because he just lost Clara, right? Whom he doesn't remember, but he knows there's this void in his life, and so he's an empty person right now. And so bumping into River Song as something that he could remember, and that was, I don't know if it was the love of his life necessarily, but it was his wife. She was his wife, and it just felt very real. At the very end, he says spoilers, right? Because he knows that their final day together is coming. It has arrived in the. I thought it was very fitting in how it all worked together. And yeah, it's great. We'll never see those 24 years on Deryllium.
No.
She will live out her life with him. And I think it was very cool. It was, there were that final scene of them hanging on that balcony. I teared up. I totally teared up. I'm like, wow, this is a love story. This is a great love story. He hands her that sonic screwdriver. He was the one that essentially built that restaurant. He was avoiding doing it for so long, even though it was, and that was all mentioned in Silence of the Library, by the way. Yeah, it was all cool. It was great. It was fitting. It was touching. It was a great Christmas episode. It was about love and remorse in a weird way, I guess, and loss. The Doctor knows that this is it. He's been avoiding this day, but at least that day is 24 years. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. This was one of my favorite Christmas specials by far. Stephen, you and Marcus and I and recorded a bit last week, and Sean gave us his list. This has shot up to, and maybe this has jumped in one of my top three Christmas episodes. It started off slow, I think, and there were kind of ups and downs. They're good characters. I did like Hydra Flax. I like that robot bodyguard thing. But it started picking up steam, and it really sort of nailed it with Rivers, her speech there. So, yeah, I loved it. Thumbs way up for me. I absolutely adored this episode, and I'll be rewatching this. There's very few Doctor Who episodes that – well, not very few, but there's Doctor Who episodes that I can rewatch over and over again. I know Robot of Sherwood was one of those last season. And I think this is going to be another one of those where I'll be able to rewatch this over and over again because it's just a great fitting end to a character, to a story.
And finally, I mean, all the stuff we've done and how Rivers sort of been like a mangled, botched character since she's been introed. It was nice to see a good story involving her after all these years.
Yeah, let's. Why don't you go in, Sean? Tell us your thoughts because you're making a great point with Rivers' character.
Well, excuse me. Yeah, you know, I didn't really feel, you know, when the announcement was made that she was coming back for the Christmas special, whatever. I didn't really care very much.
Yep,
you know,
yep.
Some people were excited. A lot of people were kind of like dreadful. I just didn't care because, you know, her run had been so uneventful and kind of disappointing. You know, when you think back to her appearance in Silence in the Library and all the potential there, and then all the sort of weird wishy-washy wibbly wobbly stuff that Moffat gave her over Matt Smith's run, and it just wasn't very good. It wasn't very compelling, and it wasn't, in my opinion, you know, and I think if you remember years ago now, Dolly, when we kind of wrapped up that season with her, we were all kind of disappointed. And it was just nice to kind of see this episode, because I agree everything you and Steven said. It was nice to see a good story involving her, a story that the character deserved from her introduction.
Yep.
And it kind of added these sort of layers and nuances to the character, and there was some really interesting stuff there in the way she acts and whether or not, you know, as she sort of like shades of gray between like being good and doing good, but also, you know, lying and manipulating, stealing and stuff like that.
Yep.
and then, of course, the whole like when you really now go back and think about it, it kind of is a one-sided sort of relationship until the end with Matt Smith. It really wasn't very good. Like, you know, like she loves him. If he loved her, he never really showed it. And the random showing up and this, that, whatever. So, and this episode really, really, really hammers that home. And I think it's great that Capaldi kind of has this material to take his sort of talents and really channel that and act that out and, you know, with his expressions and the way he talks to her and everything like that and bring that full circle and give her the sort of closure. Like, she's been wrong about that, even though the Doctor has not done a very good job until this point of showing her that.
Do you think she makes a great point of loving a monolith, right? It's like loving a monolith. It doesn't love you back, and that is the Doctor. Do you think that I almost got the feeling that this was the, you know, her not knowing that someone's phone is vibrating. It's not mine. That Sean, is that you?
Sean was muted at that exact moment, Deli, okay. So I don't know. I think maybe this is you because you're the one talking when it keeps popping on.
Well, my phone is off. Okay, whatever. It's probably just Marcus. Anyways, it's Alexa chiming in. No,
it's
but,
not my fault, says Deli. It's at 11.
Sean, but do you think that because the Doctor now met a River Song that doesn't recognize him and isn't showing any love to him, that he almost kind of felt like, hey, wait a minute. You know, why aren't you loving me? I mean, you're supposed to be my wife. And even though the Doctor was kind of the Matt Smith Doctor was this kind of uncaring person, do you think that had anything to do with it?
I think, was that directed at Sean?
That was at Sean, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can now.
Yeah, sorry, bad service. I think it is interesting, like, you know, like you said, Dolly, I think that's sort of true. We've got an established character here, the Doctor, who has been, you know, pointed out time and time again to be oblivious to the things that go on around him, even if they're super obvious. So it really wouldn't surprise me that this was sort of a wake-up call for him. And you can see it sort of slowly, you know, slowly sort of evolving in his brain throughout the episode, the realization kind of creeping in about how he is, how she feels, how he's treated her and all this stuff. So yeah, I think it is. I think it's exactly what kind of Capaldi sort of realizes and then tries to fix by the end. So which makes it all the more poignant when he realizes where they are and where the ship is going and what this means, you know, as her diary is basically filled up and what comes next. So
the diary mechanic in particular, I thought was really strong because it's like they do a really, really great job. And this is something that we, you know, Marcus, especially constantly talk about Stephen Moffat with it, which is that like, he cannot close a loop. He cannot fucking like,
right,
just
right.
let anything.
He's very bad with endings.
Exactly. And by using the diary and having specific call outs to not just what was coming next, but what happened before, we know that there is no wiggle room. Like this is right after the Angels. I think it was either the Angels in Manhattan or it was Blood and Stone.
Manhattan,
I think it was the
Manhattan.
Yeah, so this is right after Manhattan, and this is right before the library. So there is no wiggle room for her to be going off and doing anything new or different in, you know, other times or anything like that. So not only, you know, it's which is a really important distinction to make, because, you know, it's particularly with their history and everything like that, where they're moving back and forth with each other in their timelines, you know, time can, you know, basically be a free out on anything with this. So it's like, oh, well, River died in her very first episode, but whatever, like, she's got all these adventures in the past to have. But, like, here we say, nope, she doesn't have any adventures in the past because we've seen all those, and she doesn't have any adventures in the future because we've seen that as well. And I thought that was super strong.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the only thing that they really could do at this point, and I kind of hope they don't, is they could just sort of do something during that 24 years, I guess.
Yeah, I agree.
Rip her out of that night for an adventure or whatever. But
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like this would be a good fitting end. You know, I feel like this really not fixes, but kind of gives the character back some importance and some, you know, respect. And I just think that if they pulled her out for more stuff now after they finally sort of patched up some of the bad job they've done with her, mm-hmm. I think it would be a disservice and it would be a step backwards. But, you know, then again, I don't know. You know, it might be.
It would be a total
where...
Moffatism for him to bring her back in, wouldn't it? I don't think it'll happen.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I read that he wanted to write her one more time. So, I don't know. I mean, she's technically around if another showrunner ever wants, assuming the show ever gets another showrunner. But
and assuming she wants to do it.
Right, right. But yeah. I'm in agreement. I think this should be it. I think this was good. And that's just especially gratifying with the history during all the Matt Smith stuff and all the kind of ball Moffat dropped here, especially on, I mean, he drops a lot, but especially with River Song, I think that's one of the tragedies of his era.
Because she was such a good character to begin with. And, you know, yeah. She has remained a great character. Alex Kingston, like, gets it done whenever she's on screen, but so much of the, like, so many of the actors and characters on Doctor Who, it's like they're doing the best they can with a bad script.
Right. No, it's just one of those things where you're introduced to this person who knows the Doctor, knows his name, knows all the adventures they've had together, and that you have this wide open universe of potential stories and everything, and then you get really bad stuff like the Crater Lake and you know, the marriage or the Doctor or whatever the Doctor's wife, whatever that episode was called, where they get married and it's that sort of weird bubble timeline and everything else. And it's just everything like that is like, in spite of the actors, in spite of the performances, like it was just totally, to steal your guys' term, Moffitted up. So, but yeah.
I'm sure Marcus has like, you know, just the absolute opposite opinion here. He just hate it.
All right, Marcus, it's on you now. Tell us how you feel.
Wow, speechless and
that
everything.
Speechless, yeah.
he was that disappointed. Oh, my God.
Or he liked it that much that he has no words for it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah. He's still reeling from it, you know, all these days later.
Yep. Well, Marcus, can you hear us? Marcus has been sucked into a...
Are you done?
There we go. All right.
I just want to get it all out there. I loved it.
Whoa. Oh, wow. Did not expect that.
Wow. Well, look, I mean, I
not kinda... that you're a hate monger or anything towards Stephen Moffat episodes. I just wasn't expecting you to love it. That's all.
No, I genuinely enjoyed it. I thought that for the first time in Capaldi's run, we had a fun episode where he was having fun because... you know, the past two episodes. I mean, and it's ironic. I mean, I was one of the ones who was saying during the Matt Smith reign in particular that there wasn't enough darkness. It was too light all the time. And it just, you know, the last 2 years with Capaldi, we've gone the total opposite. We've gone from, you know, we had that his first season, which is pretty much insanity, you know, in a diaper bag. And then this season, you know, it's been, you know, more consistent, but it's still been dark. And this was a breath of fresh air. I mean, and that's what we need in Doctor Who. We need a bit of balance. We need some of the dark stuff. We need some of the scary stuff. We need the gritty, but we also need the fun episodes.
Yep.
And you know, the scene that summed it up was the Doctor lying on the grass on the snow, laughing because a head in a bag is insulting them or threatening them. Mm-hmm. And yep. You know, and it just goes to show, you know, again how. And then Alex Kingston, you know, or River Song bought into that laughter and they just sat there laughing. And when was the last time you really got to see that without it being, you know, the Doctor relieved that Clara isn't dead again or something.
Yeah.
And that's been lacking for 2 years. And this is good. This was a good episode. It was good closure for River Song. It was good to see, you know, how the other half lives. I mean, it's all, you know, it's always, you know, how River acts when the Doctor's away, when she's got her, you know, protect circuits engaged, if you will. And the, you know, for the Doctor to see that again was fantastic. So yeah, I thought it was a phenomenally fun episode. Alex Kingston, she can chew up the scenery with the best of them.
Yep.
I don't think she had to this time.
She was wonderful this episode. Absolutely. Yeah,
I thought it was a pretty pretty tempered.
Yep.
And obviously, you know, the bits where, you know, the Capaldi steps into the TARDIS and is like, it's bigger on the inside.
I agree with that.
I totally forgot about that scene.
And he was having so much fun with the idea of, you know, I mean, I suppose it's every sort of like, you know, if you're in a relationship, it's every, you know, every person's dream to be able just, you know, for one day to see what goes on when you're not around. How you're not even when you're in a relationship, you know, how your friends think of you when you're not around, right. If you come up at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he got to do that. And I think it was a chastening experience for him because, you know, we've talked about Matt Smith and, you know, the Matt Smith character and how, you know, sometimes he's been a total dick towards River Song.
Yep.
And treated her like, you know, some little schoolgirl following him around. And then there's been other times where, you know, in particular, I mean, obviously the BBC have been running a bunch of Doctor Who all week, you know, in the build up to Christmas special. I think they basically went through every season and crammed it all into the space of several days. Yep. But I watched the Daleks Take Manhattan again. Angels Take Manhattan. That's the one. And there's a scene where, you know, they land and Amy lands with the Doctor in Manhattan and they know they're going to meet River. And what does Matt Smith do? I mean, he's like, oh, hang on. I've just got some, you know, landing checks to make. And Amy steps outside and he goes to a reflection and gussies himself up because he's going to see River.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And unfortunately that was few and far between. You know, the alternate version of that was in the, you know, the marriage of River Song or whatever it was, you know, you were beneath me. You embarrass me was the line. I think yep. It was.
Mm, yeah.
I watched that episode horrible over the weekend. Yeah. That's awful. It's yeah. Really bad.
Awful. Awful. That does not stand the test of time in any way, shape, or form. But this was, I mean, this was good. He was having a lot of fun just not being the Doctor. And then you get through to that moment, and obviously, you know, everybody's touched on that, the moment where, you know, she's just given this amazing monologue about how he can't touch, you know, he can't love her back and blah, blah, blah. And she looks, and he is standing right there. It's like, what? And then it slowly yep. dawns on her face. And then he drops the hello sweetie line and everybody's like, yeah, that's funny. And, you know, and as soon as he drops that, it's like, you're so getting your roots done. And they just slip into the banter of, well, you ask a son to change, to dye its roots or whatever. And that was great. That was perfect patter between two actors at the top of their game, phenomenally experienced actors. And look, and this is no disrespect to the youngsters who generally come before, but I don't think a lot of them have the acting chops required to carry off a lot of these scenes. And this was two grown-ups. This was a grown-up episode of Doctor Who, you know, performed by grown-ups, no kids anywhere around. You know, supporting cast was great. Matt Lucas, I adore Matt Lucas. I always have. I mean, ever since, you know, his Shooting Stars days in the UK where he was George Dawes, the big baby. And I mean, it's bizarre. I mean, this is a guy who is probably in his early 40s and he still looks like he's a kid. But his, you know, he does these characters so well. And I'm so glad he got a better, Doctor Who part than David Walliams did when he was on.
So his name was Nardole, by the way. Nardole, who was kind of the sidekick to River and to King Hydra Flex, or as I call it, King Big Hero 6.
Yes, definitely. I mean, yes, they did obviously borrow a bunch of stuff from that movie. But yeah, I thought it was absolutely great. Bravo.
Yep.
You know, can't complain. Cannot complain about it.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. Sorry, you were going to say something? Okay, no, I was going to say there were a lot of great little jabs that River and the Doctor said to each other. And you mentioned this was an adult episode, and I do believe so, a very adult episode. I don't think fans I think this episode was predominantly geared at fans of Doctor Who, people that have been watching the series unfold since River's first her first appearance and so on. So I think this was definitely geared to that. And there was a great line in there where the Doctor and River are talking about marriages, and the Doctor says, you know, he kind of confronts her about how many marriages she's had while they've been married together. And she says, well, you know, you've been married to Elizabeth, Marilyn Monroe, and Cleopatra, which are all references to the last few years of Doctor Who, where he's done, you know, he's done those exact same things. But I loved just that callback to Silence of the Library, or I'm sorry, the Forest of the Dead. Is that what it was when he first meets her? Where she says something to, you know, you showed up on my doorstep with a new haircut and a new suit. The Doctor, I think he actually sheds a tear, which harkens back to her saying, oh, what a night that was. And I'm reading this from Wikipedia, thank you. She says, oh, what a night that was, the tower sang and you cried. And so that, you know, you had the music, the singing through those two towers, and the Doctor's actually shedding a tear. And she turns to him and says, are you crying? And then he doesn't want to tell her that this is the end. You know, this is the end of their story, I guess. And she quoted in that Force of the Dead episode, you wouldn't tell me why, but I suppose you knew it was time, my time. And I thought it was great. It was that final loop closure, because we had those phrases out there and we've sort of forgotten about those. I mean, I know I had. I didn't even remember any of that stuff, although I did always wonder where she got that sonic screwdriver from. And so I thought this was great in that it all seems to work back to some of those episodes, you know. And this is obviously the Husbands of River Song is a take on the Marriage of River Song. And so it worked out well that way. I wasn't super in love with King Hydra Flex. Like I said, he kind of reminded me of the robot from Big Hero 6. What was that? I don't remember his name.
Great Max.
Yeah, they are very. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you reminded me a lot of the. And maybe it was because I saw the episode pretty close to this one. It reminded me a lot of the Mitchell and Webb robots from. Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Oh, okay, that's a good point. Yeah, yeah.
But not as fun or funny. It just kind of like, you know, just kind of there. Like, you know, he's an imposing figure. You know, he cuts a big silhouette and everything like that. But, it, you know, with a shade of goofiness to him. But it's yet another Doctor Who villain with, like, no personality. And, like, it's a soulless robot that goes around on cold logic and stuff like that. You know, it's not really much for them to bounce off of. They're, you know, the King Hydroflex himself, the actual head, you know, is a little bit better, but he's unconscious and in a bag so often and relegated to, like, gag status so much that, like, A, it's pretty clear that he's not the focus here. Like, the, you know, so often villains are not the focus in Doctor Who, and this is just another one of those cases. But also, like, if you were going to, like, judge this episode on the merits of its villain, it's pretty low.
Right.
I thought it was cool that they created a pretty significant backstory for him off in whatever corner of the galaxy that was. And then also the whole thing where, like, the show basically ends up on the voyage of the damned for, you know, genocidal nutbags.
Right.
Which I thought was really cool. And then also he's cultivated some sort of following among this other sort of planet and society and everything like that. I don't know.
Scratch was that character's name.
You could tell that he was there basically to move their plot along, but I thought it was cool that they took the time to sort of at least paint a background story of him. And then he's sort of there if they ever want to explore that in any other way, you know, because it sounds like he's king of whatever he's been king of for a long time and does a lot of bad shit. So.
Oh, sure. They could cross over with him in the past and stuff like that. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, but it was cool. And to Dolly's point, it was the nods to continuity from stuff from, God, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just really, really cool. And then, of course, the Doctor references his, you know, Matt Smith's chin when he's trying to tell her who he is. Like, he's like, you know, I was the one with the, you know. And it was funny. Like, you know, to Marcus's point, it was a really, relatively speaking, it was a really lighthearted episode. There were a lot of jokes and fun and everything. And I, you know, for me, the highlight's probably forever going to be him, like, standing outside the TARDIS realizing what's about to happen. And I didn't even know it at first either. And he takes a deep breath and he's like, finally.
Yeah, right.
And he's like 2,000-3,000 years of the Doctor, and he's never once got a chance to do this. So it's just like it was just, and Capaldi just knocks it out of the park because of course he does. And I was dying. Like I turned to Kat and my girlfriend. I was like, oh my God, watch this. This is gonna be amazing. And he, you know, he just nails the scene, and I was just cracking up.
Like the line specifically, like the line, I don't remember the exact phrasing of it, but it was just like, I'm going to do this properly for once, or finally someone does it properly. It's so perfect. It's so
how
great.
This is supposed to be done.
Yeah. It's like, I've been waiting, like, especially, and they've set that up with like having characters, you know, they play with the, like, it's bigger on the inside so much and like it's smaller on the outside sort of thing. It's just like, okay, well that one's new. With Clara and stuff like that. And then, like, he's like, finally, after, you know, after however many years, 8-9 years of this stuff, somebody finally is going to do it properly on this show, and it's going to be me.
No, it was really good. And
it's, you know, great. It's great to see that influence that Capaldi has had on Doctor Who, because I do believe a lot of this stuff really is, you know, writing aside, I think a lot of this stuff really is coming from his heart in what he's always kind of viewed Doctor Who. So there are almost these in-jokes that he delivers so well. And he tends to say the things that the rest of us as fans have been thinking for a long time, right? Like, obviously this TARDIS scene and the River Song stuff. I mean, in this season especially, I think it's really come to fruition. But he seems to be much more in tune with what we as fans have wanted out of Doctor Who, and he's been willing to address that stuff like head on and put his own little flavoring to it. It's brilliant. He has been a phenomenal Doctor, and I think this was a great, you know, dot on the exclamation point of that, because he did really work all that together.
Yeah, it's just another instance of really not wanting him to go anywhere for a long time. Like I want him to go longer than the 3-season average that Tennant and Smith and everybody else has had. Yeah, and it also kind of feels like it almost feels fresh, like a fresh start. You know, the Clara stuff's behind him. The River Song stuff is wrapped up. He's in a good place. So there's all this possibility out of him now, all this potential for new stories and new character arcs and everything else. So hopefully, you know,
they're
in the right direction.
There is literally zero baggage for Capaldi now. Like, you know, from
Missy. Beginning. Oh, from prior to him, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, Missy is his. Like, Missy belongs to the Capaldi era, as far as I'm concerned. And
agreed.
You know, like, the same way that a new regeneration of the Doctor is a completely different person every time. I think that counts here just as well. Getting to see like him sort of like tie up all of his baggage from previous seasons and previous Doctors, and like seeing him like as the warmest individual that he has ever been, probably that the Doctor has ever been. Like the Capaldi stuff, like it's a weird dichotomy because like Capaldi is meaner than the Doctor has been in a very long time, like since like classic Who, you know, to round out his first season and most of his second season. But then now we're seeing him like make this incredibly human connection with River Song for the very first time out of any of the Doctors. For the first time with River Song and with probably any other person, like, you know, he has had good relationships with companions and stuff in the past, but they've always been just friends or, you know, partners in crime and, you know, stuff like that. And you know, that is the perfectly good ground for like a warm, loving relationship. Yep. Absolutely. But that's just not how Doctor Who has ever played it. And now this time, yeah, you know, we have this, like the Doctor in a romantic relationship and he's actually treating it like, you know, like one and, has that great moment with like Hello Sweetie and the 24 years and it's just
this is the first time I think since Girl in the Fireplace that I really feel that the Doctor has made some type of emotional connection and really shows his human side, you know, whatever, if there's still a human side left. But no, I totally agree with you. I think that's what
made his mother's side.
Yeah, exactly.
Half human on his mother's side. There you go.
But I think that's what's made Capaldi so endearing. And you guys made a great point. He has no more baggage from the previous stuff, but he does have, you know, Missy, a very compelling master, an awesome master now with Michelle Rodriguez and is it Rodriguez? Oh my God, Gomez? Sorry, Michelle Gomez. I was thinking Michelle Rodriguez from Fast and Furious.
Very different person.
No.
But yeah, the Missy, you know, the master. You have Gallifrey is back, and the Time Lords are back. You have you know, Davros is back kind of in a new way. And so I think there's a lot of really cool things, UNIT in a really interesting, compelling way, the Zygons. And there's this really cool point of time that we're at right now with Doctor Who. And I think everything from now on is a fresh story and a fresh direction with a little sprinkling of you know, some of the history and heritage of Doctor Who. So I think it's a great point. And this is a good, I think this was a really good bow or ribbon, you know, and all the previous stuff that we've had leading up to this, all of Moffat's era, you know, tied up all together. So I think it worked out extremely well. And there was even a little callback to Clara with, and I just read this on the Wikipedia while you fine gentlemen were talking. But the, you know, the Doctor mentions that that every Christmas is last Christmas, which is, I think, something that Dream Danny Pink said to Clara last year.
Yeah, he was quoting Wham.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. But so I think it all worked well, and it actually leaves me extremely, extremely positive going forward for Doctor Who, and not knowing anything that's going to happen next is really kind of cool. So yeah, I think it's great that it ended the way it did.
Yeah. How about Capaldi's Doctor refusing to bow?
Yeah,
a little
yeah.
Speech about that. Yep. And then the diary, like
the bad.
Sorry,
back.
These are my last two tidbits. But man, like I really hope the Doctor inadvertently, you know, didn't realize what he was doing, because her bit about how like only the Doctor would give you a diary with the exact amount of pages, and you know when it's coming to an end, that your time's coming to an end. Like holy shit, like that's some heavy stuff. Like,
yeah.
For such a fun, lighthearted episode, they got really.
Yep.
There were points where it got really intense and really sort of sad. So bravo, you know, I give two thumbs way up on this was from top to bottom. Like Marcus said, there's just nothing to complain about. Like it was just a good episode of Doctor Who, and like you were saying, I probably catapults pretty high, if not to the top of my Christmas list. So
I found myself wanting to give my wife a good hug and go buy her some roses, and there's a little bit of that, wow, the Doctor is actually not a bad husband with everything he just pulled off. I mean, he essentially created the restaurant that that he had been promising her for the longest time. Built it himself.
Yeah, well, I mean, no, he didn't, but...
Yeah, he can't.
It was cool to use time travel to do that, though. Like, yes. Step in and out of the TARDIS and see something build out. That was a really, really cool bit, too.
Absolutely, yeah. Like,
and that whole point of... Yep, and then he steps into the restaurant, says, I'd like to book a table, your finest table. Oh, it's not going to be available until Christmas in 4 years. No problem. Which is great.
I'll be right back.
I'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. And he gets it all set up, like, in, you know, in a moment and stuff like that, and just kind of, like, goes a little bit of the way towards, like, giving us, like, a reason why we should like the Doctor, like, or, like, why, you know, River gives this, you know, gives her a huge speech about how, like, you know, you don't love the son and expect it to love it back and all that stuff. And, you know, granted, the Doctor, you know, is definitely, a monolithic figure and all this stuff like that, but he never really does, like, at least in, you know, recent seasons, he's been so flying by the seat of his pants and, like, and oftentimes not really doing something that, you know, really seems like worthy of monolith status, like, if that makes sense, like, not helping people, really, and not saving people in a great way, or and a lot of that stuff. And with Capaldi, it's been, you know, even in his best episodes, it's mostly, like, been about him. It's not about him saving a bunch of, like, civilizations or anything like that. It's, you know, the Capaldi punching his way through diamonds, you know, that only affects him. But this, like, little tiny scene, it's just like, no, he has a time machine, and and he's clever, and he has all this foresight, and he has all this stuff. So within, like, 15 seconds, he's able to set up, like, the most romantic engagement and, like, dinner and stuff like that, and change the course of, like, history in the galaxy just for River. And he does it in, like, you know, without even having a second thought. And it's the first sort of thing we've seen from him in a good long while that like, explains, like, why would you even love this guy?
And her speech, I think, essentially breaks his heart a little bit, because he hears her say that she loves him, you know, in incredible ways, and she's never really felt it back from him. And that interview in Vanity Fair that we were kind of chatting about earlier really does talk to a little bit about that, and how I think Alex Kingston even mentions that it's almost like she didn't know if that was from the Doctor character or from Matt Smith as an actor. But yeah, this is the first time the Doctor, or this is one of the times the Doctor really realized that, hey, someone truly cares for me, and I haven't been showing that back. And it's about time that I buck up and do the duty of a husband. So really, really well done. Well, any final thoughts before I want to get into some of the stuff that our listeners have mentioned? So, okay, I'll hop in. Let's see here. Christine, or at Liv Non Sequitur, or Liv Non Sequitur, writes, for as much as River's character was abused in the past, she felt like the old River again. Loved it. Hope they leave her be now. Yeah, I totally agree. I think we all have kind of said that, that she did feel, you know, pulled in all these different directions. And now we finally got that. We got her to be herself, which she was, you know, kind of a really methodical and willing to lie, cheat, steal, and still make it back to, you know, what she needed to be. So, Bo Andre Ingverson at Bachby writes, feels like they are doing cleanups so that they can do a mini reset like they did with Matt Smith. I'm a sucker for a certain song, and since Smith left both 10 and 11, it's like they start a similar song but never complete it. Having the towers sing with the music and everything felt like an overall fitting way to tie a bow around questions raised since the library. Though, of course, she could return in ghost form, which we already know that happens somewhat. But I really hope they only do that if it's some big Journey's End thing where they gather everyone. But my guess that will only happen when Moffat leaves, and considering Sherlock became too big, where Series 6 is at least 6 to 8 years away. I don't see that happening anytime soon. By the way, thoughts on combining screwdriver and glasses? It's a good good question. Yeah, he had the screwdriver and the glasses this episode.
I thought it was cool. I thought it was a nice little nod that the glasses still kind of float around, but he's also got his new screwdriver, so in theory, everybody should be happy.
Yep. And then Annalie, good friend at Sublevel 28, writes, this year's special, brilliant. Had all the bits I wanted, and R&D, gorgeous together. And Smiley Peter, swoon, 5 out of 5 Sonics. Any final words before we get into our ratings here?
No, I think we've basically said everything we want to. Like, we've been gushing over it for, like, 20 minutes here, but I don't know. Marcus had kind of dropped out a little bit there for a bit, but wanted to make sure that he didn't get left behind, I guess.
I love that River Song timeline, by the way, you just posted in our...
That's the flowchart.
That's an amazing
flowchart. I really think that was a wink to the audience. That thing's been floating around. And
okay.
I recommend everybody search for that, because that's a cool little thing.
Yep.
post it in the show notes.
Yes. I'll actually remember to do it this time.
So I think, you guys have pretty much said everything I would want to say. I love the idea that this is hopefully a reboot. This is a clean slate for Capaldi, and we get to see, you know, a Capaldi that can have some fun and isn't going to, you know, isn't weighted down with baggage from the previous Doctor, because everything, I mean, they, as you said, they've totally cleaned house now. Everybody go bye-bye. Let's see how it goes. And let me talk 1 sec about the ratings, because the ratings were down again this year.
That's bizarre to me, yeah.
This is a call out to any Brits who are watching or who are listening and have sort of like stepped away thinking, you know, taking the Doctor Who for granted. Well, Doctor Who is now a co-production between BBC Wales and BBC America. BBC America is chipping in the funds, you know, because it's the biggest show on the network over here. And let me just tell you something, my British friends. If you don't continue to watch, or if you don't get out there and get other people to watch, BBC America will get more and more input into how Doctor Who is done, because it will start to cater more for the American market. What's going on over there? Is there anybody else hearing that?
Yeah, it's Steven, I think.
Hearing what?
Okay. That loud buzzing from your microphone.
That loud, like, background conversation. I was in the middle of an interesting point. Yes, the lower the ratings go on the BBC in the UK, the more input BBC America is going to have. And let me just say to you that, well, I love these Americans that I do a podcast with, and most Americans are fantastic. Let me just say to you, the Paul McGann Doctor, the tie-in with Fox, that movie from the 90s, you want that back, carry on not watching Doctor Who in the UK. Carry on bad-mouthing the BBC. Because that's what you're going to fucking get. It'll be that, or it'll be Torchwood Miracle Day. And like I said, no offense to the Americans that listen to this show, because they're all good people, but American network executives are fucking morons. And they will start to pander. And we don't need that pandering. So, yes, get watching. Get your friends to watch when the new season starts. Say, get into it, you fuckers. You're going to lose it forever.
Marcus, putting the viewers to task. Yeah, and I agree with you. Do you think this that has anything to do with the shifting time slot of Doctor Who over the last couple of years? Because it's kind of gone back and forth time slot-wise, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a number of things. But there is that, you know, as I've said before on several episodes, there's a backlash against the BBC right now, that the government are doing their best to cripple the BBC, and the stupid morons who are the lowest hanging fruit in the UK are getting resentful of having to pay for the BBC, but they don't know what they've got. So, yeah, as I've said to many Brits, feel free to come over here and watch American network TV for a week. You'll be screaming for the BBC afterwards.
Yeah, it sounds like it's just a combination of unfortunate things, along with also the rise of the technology that allows people to watch television anytime, any place, not just live.
Everybody get back watching. This season, the last season was way better than the season before. We're on a clean slate now. And this will probably be Capaldi's final year, and probably
not. No,
please don't say that.
Well, no, he's signed for three. That's it. He's up for three, and he's out. We all know that. So we will, you know, this time next year, we will be discussing a new regeneration if the show lasts.
I hope not. I hope no new regeneration. Well, with that said, there's let's get this. Let's get these scores in here, right? Should we say TARDISes, or no, not TARDIS, out of sonic screwdrivers, how many sonic screwdrivers do you guys give this episode? I'm going to lead in. I'm going to start. I never get to start. I'm going to say 5 out of 5 sonic screwdrivers. Love this episode. Steven.
Yeah, absolutely. 5 out of 5. Same thing from me. Loved it. Probably the most I've loved Doctor Who in a long while. Yeah, absolutely.
Marcus?
1100.
Brilliant. And Sean.
Yeah, 5 out of 5 singing towers. Great ending for character. Ooh. No real collateral damage except for a bunch of genocidal maniacs. The doctor at his finest. A lot of jokes. A lot of fun.
Well, a couple of people do get their heads chopped off.
Yeah, but they're still
alive. But they survive.
And they're part of a super robot now.
So, and they love their new gigs now.
But yeah, don't screw it up, Moffat. Leave her be. This is a good ending for a character. Mm-hmm. And that the end of that episode is going to go down in history as some of the best Who has to offer. So,
yes.
Totally 5 out of 5. This would
have been a good episode for Moffat to sign off on.
Yeah, I agree.
I read that he didn't know if this was going to be his last episode or not. So the last thing he wanted to do, if he didn't know, was to write her one more time.
That Vanity Fair article, has a quote from him saying, like, I thought this could be my last episode I ever wrote, so I wanted it to be that. So.
Yep. But yeah, good stuff. I'm really happy about it. Bring on season 10.
Bring on season 10. And as for us, we don't quite know what's going to happen, Doctor Who-wise, with Lonely TARDIS over the next few weeks here. We may go on a little bit of a hiatus, at least from the Doctor Who standpoint, but that doesn't mean that you won't be hearing from us. And we're going to discuss a little bit about next steps for us here before Doctor Who returns or any major Doctor Who news returns. But until then, we are going to sign off. Truly hope you guys have a wonderful remainder of the holiday season, an awesome new year. We'll be back in 2016 at some point. Let's talk Doctor Who, if not other things. But until then, please rate and review us on iTunes. I think we're all over the place now. I submitted us to a bunch of different other podcast directories. If you've only found us on iTunes, you'll be finding us in many other places. You can find us at Twitter at Lonely TARDIS. You can find us online at www.lonelytardis.com// Happy Fun Time Crew or something.
You're really good at promoting the band, brand there, Dolly.
There you go. You can find me personally at Dolly Domofsky on the Twitter. And now I've basically changed all my social media accounts to Dolly Domofsky after having some issues over the last couple of weeks here. So, yeah, Dolly Domofsky everywhere. Steven, where can we find you?
That's Steven Strom on Twitter, StevenStrom. You can find me on IGN, Ars Technica, Dorkly, and some other places, and possibly more in 2016.
And Sean?
At Sean Orton, SHAUNNORTON.
And Marcus?
At Annoyed Gamer.
That's it. And the no comments allowed.
Yeah, I haven't done that for a couple of weeks. I took December off because there wasn't much to talk about.
Sure. But,
I'm sure I'll come back and do something with that sooner rather than later. But the one thing I do want to say to people, you've probably seen it in the advertising, but the BBC is going to be re-airing the last season.
Yes.
Starting the end of January, BBC America is going to be running it 2 episodes back to back, which for the two-part is actually going to make it very interesting. So we'll actually get to see the two-parters all in one go. And it's called The Doctor's Notes. They are going to be also showing additional behind-the-scenes footage. They're going to be having little pop-ups with little tidbits. And most excitingly for me, they're going to be showing fan art because, I fucking love fan art.
There is some decent fan art out there. That's I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I noticed the advertising for that. And I will be watching that. I think actually it's a great little way to get some Doctor Who tidbits in and on some of those episodes. So great. Thanks for bringing that up.
Fan art.
With that said, we'll see you guys in the next Lonely TARDIS and anywhere we may find you. Until then, adios, goodbye. Happy holidays. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, yay!